You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
I'm going to turn to our third panelist today, Dunya Kauze. She's an associate expert at UNRISD, a position funded by the government of Germany, and a researcher in our program on social dimensions of sustainable development. Dunya will look at energy transition through an eco-social lens, drawing on the analysis and recommendations in the UNRISD flagship report, Policy Innovations for Transformative Change. Dunya?
Thank you, Jennifer. As Jennifer introduced, UNRISD's take on energy basically comes from our latest flagship report where we analyze different policy innovations for transformative change. So our key question is, what is renewable energy's transformative potential? And here it's important to say that transformation, in our definition, means a change that tackles the root causes of poverty, inequality, and environmental degradation. So let's look first at some of the development benefits of renewable energy. As most of you probably have heard, renewable energy can ensure affordable and off-grid energy access in many remote areas, especially in developing countries, thereby improving livelihoods, opening up new income-earning opportunities, tackling harmful indoor air pollution. So as we had, we heard about the coal miners, but actually the WHO has a report saying that millions of people each year die from indoor air pollution due to unclean cooking, basically, or the use of solid fuels for cooking. And this has a gender dimension as well, because it's, on the one hand, women and children who are disproportionately affected by this harmful pollution, but it's also an issue of time poverty when women have to actually go and gather wood for firewood for cooking and other things in their time. Then it's of course not just an issue of rural areas, it's also an issue of cities. And here we hear a lot that cities are kind of the forerunners of sustainability, but we shouldn't forget that cities are also key sources of greenhouse gas emission. A study by IRENA, the International Renewable Energy Agency, suggests, for example, that cities are responsible for around 70% of global greenhouse gas emissions. And here we see a lot of potential in modernizing buildings, changing energy sources to not only reduce the carbon footprint, but also to improve air pollution and thereby to improve the quality of life, which is, of course, an issue not just in developing countries, but also in a lot of the global north countries, so to say. For examples are switches to public transport, but also increasing public green spaces, which can help to improve the microclimate and reduce the heat island effect. Now, if it's all that wonderful and renewable energy has a lot of this potential, why do we need this eco-social lens? I should say what we mean by an eco-social lens or approach is a very significant shift in perspective, which would mean that we see economic activity as a means to reach equity and environmental sustainability. This is, of course, not trivial, but it's really necessary because we see often what we call a triple injustice. You may have heard already of the double injustice of climate change, where those who are least responsible for it are now faced with the most severe consequences. But this can also actually lead to a triple injustice, where those who are already disadvantaged now are even more disadvantaged because of green economy policies or transitions that reproduce or exacerbate inequalities, or also lead to negative distributional consequences. And here some examples are, for example, still the, as we heard in the energy sector, the lacking participation of women in the labor force in a lot of these approaches. But also more simply, in the global north, we have, for example, many opportunities through solar home systems, etc., that are only open to those who can afford them because of the high upfront investments, and also only make sense for homeowners. So if you're not lucky enough to own your own home, you won't be able to benefit. In the global south, we've seen a lot of land grabbing around biofuel, but also other renewable energy installations. The picture shows a protest against a hydropower dam along the Mekong because it affects the local fishers who no longer have sufficient fish. It also affects, of course, the local environment, downstream areas, because of the lacking sediment transport, etc. So basically, what we need is an energy justice approach to ensure that we have an equitable burden and benefit sharing and also participatory governance. This is really important because, as you know, all countries have signed up to the 2030 agenda, and if we want to implement it along the principle of leaving no one behind, we really need to ask ourselves how we can make sure that especially the poor and marginalized people can participate in transitions. And I should add, of course, it's not a question. It's still a yes to renewable energy. It's just keeping in mind that we need to make sure the transition is just, as Marek has mentioned. Now, to give you just some innovative examples that could be inspiring, still not perfect solutions, but really interesting. One is Solar Sister, which is basically a social enterprise, a network of female entrepreneurs in which the women are trained and supported to have their own little business selling solar lights or also solar mobile chargers, which increases their incomes and independence in rural and really remote areas of Africa, and currently it runs in Tanzania, Uganda, and Nigeria. Which then also has the benefit, of course, for the rural community to be able to charge their mobile phones, to be in contact with other family that is far away, or also help children to just study after the dark. I mean, as simple as that. Then maybe another example from Europe is our energy cooperatives, which you see in many European countries, the UK, Denmark, but also in Germany. Actually, we heard already something about the Energiewende. And here it's interesting that actually one of the major drivers of this energy transition in the past was communities and energy cooperatives who really found solutions to push for renewable energy, who saw the local benefits. It has increased communal revenues because of the local business tax and the communal share of income tax. It created jobs locally. One should add that here again, it's not all perfect. There's actually in the latest addition to the Renewable Energy Act, there has been a certain level of pushback for community participation because it's now all kind of bigger energy installations now have to go through an official tender process, which is of course more difficult for communities to participate in simply because of the upfront investment. So, why basically is UNRISD looking at energy transition? I hope these few examples could give you an idea of where we see social aspects of energy transitions. So the conclusion is actually simple. Energy is a social issue. It's not just a matter of technology and environment. And what we say is we need actually some kind of eco-social policy mix to ensure not only sustainable but also equitable outcomes. And here we find that the most successful examples that we could identify so far are those that combine participatory governance and decision-making processes with progressive social policies and with local initiatives and innovations on the ground.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unrisd.org. Thank you for listening.